So arguably the best game of Euro 2020 so far has just finished this Tuesday evening as France took on Germany and Didier Deschamps' side were able to scamper away with a 1-0 victory thanks to Mats Hummels' own goal. We break down the major talking points from that game, Portugal's victory earlier in the day, and of course all of the action from yesterday here on Why Football Happens with Paul McDonald and Stephen Drennan.
France v Germany, 1-0 to the French, an own goal settled it in the end, in the group of death. Stephen, what's your thoughts on that match?
Very enjoyable match to watch. I think you can see the quality difference between France and probably almost every other team we've seen so far. Their attackers in particular, like, they all have a very clear role and they're all elite at that role. And it just makes such a difference. Like, Mbappe running in behind, his pace is just absolutely terrifying. And he timed his runs off today several times, but you get the impression if he gets it right, he's going to destroy a team. He could have had like three if he was got his timing better today. Benzema and Griezmann linking the play between the midfield and attacks, fantastic as well. What about yourself?
Yeah, I thought... We discussed in the pre-tournament podcast that we thought that France were the team to beat, and I didn't see anything tonight that suggests otherwise. Germany gave them a really good go and made them spend spells back to the wall and made them defend, and they did that as well as they attacked, and I was just thoroughly impressed with the overall performance. It was almost like a club performance of a team playing away from home, which they kind of were in Allianz Arena in Germany. They knew they had to attack for certain spells, but they also knew they had to go through periods where they had to defend. And I thought they did all of that diligently and performed really well. And Mbappe was a little bit off tonight in terms of the time and his runs, as you say, and also maybe in his shot selection and his pass selection in the final third. But if that comes together, they are a formidable force. And I really don't see anything from that performance to sway me away from the fact that they are the best team in this tournament by some distance.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is I was racking my brain today trying to think of a dominant team coming into a Euros that actually won it. I remember the last Euros, Portugal looked garbage in the groups. They were drawn like with Latvia, and then I think they drew with Hungary, and I can't remember the other game, but I think they drew all three games, just about sneaked through. And then most of their games were basically a bit like that all the way to the final. They were like, they didn't really have any games where they turned it on and you thought, wow, they're going to run through this tournament. They were always like the sort of dark horse. Maybe they get somewhere in the tournament. Nobody really thought they would win it until they did. I just think like every Euros has kind of been a bit like that. Like, I was just racking my brain trying to think of a team where I went into the tournament thinking, oh, no one's going to beat them. And then that team actually won it. And that's sort of the weird thing maybe I would say against France is that maybe starting the tournament on fire isn't the best thing. Like, maybe it's always one of those slow burner teams that sort of finds a bit of rhythm and tough to beat, scrape through the groups, and then maybe that's sort of what's better for a competition like this.
I would push back against the Spanish in 2012, coming off that World Cup win in 2010 and being holders of the tournament. I mean, I think their victory in 2008 was a bit more impressive in terms of how they did it than the one in 2008 was a bit more impressive than the one they did in 2012. But I still think they were easily the best team in the world at that point, even though they didn't really have a centre forward. But as you say, to go beyond that, you're probably looking back at France themselves in 2000, coming off the back of the World Cup win at that point as being the dominant team in Europe. And I take your point, like, there's been a lot of shocks in the Euros over the years, and there's been teams that have came out of the pack and might not necessarily have impressed people from the very start. But I just don't see any weakness in this team. In fact, I saw more strengths tonight than I saw weaknesses. I've been worried about them in terms of their pre-tournament results and how they've fared. And I just thought that tonight they were up against a good Germany team, perhaps an underrated Germany team. and they did everything against them that you would expect from a top-class team. Attacked well, defended well, did everything across the board. So I think that that just solidifies my opinion that they are the team to beat.
Yeah, the one negative I had, not really a negative, but the one thing was the thing I said on our WhatsApp group about Rabiot. It's just such a strange choice for that midfielder that was sort of looking to play a little bit ahead of Pogba and Kante in the build-up. And he was sort of receiving the ball behind the German midfield and then turning and looking to play passes into the forwards. And it was just, it's just not a thing I associate him with. And then he was running beyond the forwards and then he had that chance where he got into the box and he could have just squared it to Griezmann and they'd probably score. But he took a shot and hit the post. And you just think, like, maybe he's the one player in that starting 11 tonight where you thought, oh, they could do better than that, surely. But when you look at their bench, there isn't really like a natural number 10 or a linking midfielder, I guess, that
was funny
put in there instead.
It's funny you say that because I thought the same about Hernandez, the left back. I thought at times tonight he was a bit rash and a bit making the wrong calls a couple of times. I think he's a really good player, but on a couple of occasions, he just seemed to overrun the ball or be slightly out of position. And I was kind of worried about him overall in terms of his overall setup. But that's a minor complaint for that team, to be honest. I don't think that's an overall problem. I do think that if anything happens to Kante, you're losing not only one player, but you're losing two.
Yeah.
Because I think Pogba, as shown when he's partnered with anybody else at Man United, is not the same player that he is when he plays with Kante. I thought Pogba was quite brilliant tonight in so many ways that he doesn't often show for United. And it's because he's got Kante next to him doing all the stuff that Pogba really can't be arsed doing. And I think if you lose Kante in any capacity, you're losing Pogba as well, no matter who you pair him with. And that's not to say that the French don't have other good defensive midfield players. They have the likes of Tolisso that could drop in. But it's just not the same in terms of the collaboration that they two have got together where one knows what the other one's going to do. And I think the only way that France can't get to at least the semi-finals, if not the final, is if something happens to Kante, because then you're losing that entire base. You're not just losing Kante, you're losing Pogba as well.
Yeah, Kante's one of those multiplayer type midfielders. He just raises the level of everyone who sort of plays with him. I remember someone, I can't remember where it was now, I read it or saw it, but someone once used the term tactical debts. There's certain players that create tactical debts in your team, and then there's certain other players that pay them for them. And the example was Steven Gerrard, I guess, at Liverpool, where whenever he was in central midfield, Rafa didn't really like him there, so he put him out on the right. And then once he got Mascherano and Alonso in, he brought him back into the middle.
Yeah.
And those two just paid all of Gerrard's tactical debts. You want to run around and look for space, that's fine. You can do that because those two behind you will always protect you. And I think at Juventus, he had that in Pirlo and I think it was Marchisio and Vidal. Yeah. So he had those players around him that were always going to pay his debts for him, and Pogba can be as free-spirited as he wants and just run around killing things. And at France, it seems like Kante does all of that on his own. And Pogba's just free to look for little pockets of space and kill teams as soon as the transition starts. And he's excellent at that ball he played for the goal. It was just like, if you pause it at the point where he has it, you still don't really see that pass. You're like, how does he see that pass and just put it like right in the, like just drops it in behind the defender perfectly? It was insane. Like that's, you rarely see passes that are just like take your breath away like that, but that's one of them. And he played another one in the game as well. I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was just like little moments like that. He's one of those players who can just win you a game. And the goal was all Pogba. If you look at that entire sequence, the thing is Paul Pogba. He just wins you that game.
Yeah.
With that one moment.
Talking about tactical debts, we'll move on to Portugal. I didn't see the full of this match. I only saw the second half, but I wasn't particularly impressed by what I saw, despite the 3-0 victory. What's your overall thoughts on how Portugal fared?
Yeah, when I was watching this Portugal game, I like Portugal a lot. One of my good friends is from Portugal, and so they're a team I pay a lot of attention to. And it's, I said before I started a tournament, my head says France and my heart says Portugal. And watching them, it just feels like when you're watching a Mourinho team and Mourinho's sort of in a bad moment and the team just sort of labours quite a lot, and he puts out a lineup that's sort of a lot more defensive than it needs to be, and he leaves out those midfielders that you sort of think that will turn you turn the game for you. Like today, he had Danilo and Carvalho, and it just didn't seem necessary at all. I think it just puts someone in there that can turn on the ball and open up the opposition. Like when you watch Carvalho for Betis, he's great on the counter-attack when he's got space to exploit, but he's not someone that's going to unpick a defence. And Danilo's the exact same. And it just seemed like such a waste to put both of those players in together in midfield against Hungary. And it just felt like such a Mourinho side, where you're waiting on the brilliance of the attackers to do something rather than the team being built to bring out the best of the players. So it was just such a weird performance. And then once they find a goal from a lucky deflection, the floodgates just opened and soon it became 3-0.
Yeah, I mean, Ronaldo did his usual kind of mopping up after the team, after the work is done kind of thing.
Stat padding is Twitter report.
Stats padding, that's a bit harsh obviously Ronaldo, but I think that's him now, the all-time top European Championship goal scorer, well-deserved, and nobody else better can have it. But overall, based on what I saw in the second half, I would expect a little bit more of this team. But again, we have to caveat it. There's different ways of playing. And Mbappe, for example, can thrive against a Germany team that are obviously going to press and attack, whereas Hungary were very much adamant that nothing was going to get through them for the majority of the game, and they weren't interested in coming out of their low block whatsoever. So it doesn't allow guys to, like Bernardo or Fernandes, to play any passes because there's no room to play them. So maybe once they play the other two teams in the group and things open up a little bit, we might see a different Portugal. But I don't know. I still think that it's going to sound nuts because considering Ronaldo scored twice, but I think the team is still too heavily related to his position on the pitch. I think that somebody else in that role might open up an entire avenue of options for that team. But it's not going to happen, so there's no point in debating about it because Ronaldo's going to play every game. So we just need to see how they form against the two better teams in the group and see if their ability to play better against a better team could come to the fore. But did you see any parallels between what Spain did on Monday night versus what Portugal played like today?
No, it was different. I thought with Spain there was a tactical plan and lots of positional play and there was a lot of basically the players trying to make the ball. Sorry, the players basically trying to make the system open up the opposition. Whereas with Portugal, it just felt like it was down to individuals. Like with Bruno, for example, when you watch Bruno at Manchester United, he's always better in the games where United can open up and start counter-attacking teams. But whenever they're facing a low block, he tends to need someone in there with him to help. And usually it's when they play Pogba and him and Bruno working together can make it happen. But today, Bruno was just on the periphery of the whole game. He had one long-range shot, I think. It was good, but he didn't really get into the game. And then when you've got a player like Jota, for example, Jota had lots of good movement and lots of good runs, but the service just wasn't there, so it doesn't really count for anything. And so it's basically just everything they did sort of just came down to the moments of brilliance. There was also the chance that came to Ronaldo. Basically, the chance just broke to him. And he spooned it over the bar, and it was just the defender just failed to cut it out. So there was lots of getting the ball into good areas, but from Portugal, but they didn't really look threatening at any point, I guess, until they scored.
I would say to I asked you a loaded question then about Spain because you know what I think about the Spain performance. I think it's been quite underrated. I think that Sweden set out to be ultra, ultra defensive and they got away with it in the end. But I think that a lot of the build-ups and possessions and crucially high pressures and ability to win the ball back from Spain was impressive. Like Spain's a team that I've watched and supported for a long time, considering that I wrote about La Liga for a decade now. And I watch these guys every week. But I'm under no illusion that this is not the team that won the World Cup, and it's not even the team that won the Euros. But there are clear tactical plans from Enrique that are being put in place here, and I think they were unfortunate that it didn't happen. I think his stubbornness as a coach is going to count against him. I think that his stubbornness to play Rodri and Koke in that midfield. The same way that you mentioned about Portugal's midfield today, I do think that there is a bit of a parallel there. I do think that they don't need two of those guys in a game like that. I think Thiago would have been an obvious pick to play in one of those positions from the very beginning, because Luis Enrique should have known exactly how that game was going to pan out, and he would have needed the kind of injection of positive play from Thiago that potentially Koke and Rodri really don't give you. So I think that was maybe an error. But otherwise than that, they had enough chances to win the game easily win the game. And He's got enough ability in his as attacking players to do so. But to touch on his stubbornness, he's faced real pressure from the press in Spain about Morata. And I don't think Morata did himself any favours last night, particularly missing that early chance. And I think that, bear in mind that Moreno got 42 goal assists this season in terms of goals and assists combined in the entire campaign across La Liga and Villarreal winning the Europa League. And it becomes less and less of an option for Luis Enrique to leave Morata out of the team and leave Moreno on the bench, I think. So I don't think that Luis Enrique will make wholesale changes for the next match against Poland, but I do think that if he is going to think about one, it probably is going to be in the centre-forward position, because I think that Morata's had a lot of chances now, and I think that Moreno is clearly more of a player on form.
Yeah, someone asked me about this on Twitter, and my remark on Moreno was simply that he hasn't done it yet in like a major tournament. And it sounds like nitpicking, but it's just one of those things where there's lots of forwards that are sort of good at club level, and then they get in the international level and it's a bit different, and they need to get used to that difference. And some of them never do. Robbie Fowler is probably a good example of someone who, when he was playing for Liverpool at the time, I think he was like scoring like 20, 30 a season. But when he got the chances for England, he just didn't look quite the same player. With Moreno, if he gets into the team and he can score some goals, then yeah, that's great. But because he hasn't had a big tournament and played for Spain and he's 29, it's a case of maybe he's not someone to build on for the future. And the coach is sort of thinking about that and thinking, I don't want to use him because he's 29 and I'd rather try and get use out of these younger guys. But
Morata's not far off in terms of the age bracket, though. Morata must be 27 now as well. And Morata's already had a major tournament twice, actually. Morata's already had the Euros in 2016, and he had the World Cup, and it's not really worked in either occasion. Yeah. So that's why the clamour is on. I mean, Gerard Moreno is absolutely a late bloomer. Like, I'm a Villarreal fan, and I watch a lot of their games, and Moreno didn't come through initially. He was sold to Espanyol. And he had a great season at Espanyol. Then he had a buyback clause in his contract, and they signed him back. And it's only now in the last couple. Certainly, it was really good last season as well. But this season, he's really coming to the fore. He's 29 now. He's not a young player. But I don't think that looking at Spain's other options, there's anybody else that's got the broad skill set that he's got in the team. And I think that's something that Luis Enrique has to account for now, because Moreno's decent in the air, he's good on the ground, he can hold the ball up, and he's got a fantastic shot on him, and all those attributes can't really be said about Morata at the moment. So that's the problem that he's going to face, because he clearly likes Morata and how he builds up the game, but he's not doing it, and that's the problem he's going to face.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm not that worried about Spain, though, because at the end of the day, if you're facing a team that's just going to sit in the block, and you create four big chances in that game, you're going to score at least, the odds say that you'll score two. And if you don't, you'll probably score one. But often you'll score a lot more than two. So I'm not really that worried about Spain. It's just one of those things of like variance. If they had scored one goal, they probably would have scored two or three. And it's just that in this game, they just couldn't find a breakthrough. But if you're creating that many chances against a stubborn team, that's a good sign. Whereas with Portugal, my worry was they weren't really creating anything. Like if you look at the XG for their game, it all came after the first goal, and the first goal was a scuffed deflected shot into the bottom corner, and then after that you've got like a point blank tap in and a penalty, which is like basically like two-thirds of their XG. So the thing I would say about Portugal is their scoreline's a lie almost. They weren't breaking that team down, Whereas with Spain, they were breaking Sweden down and creating chances, but they just weren't converting them. And that's much, much easier to build upon than the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. That's almost a separate Why Football Happens pod all of its own in terms of talking about game state, because that's the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
In terms of when this happened, what was the game state when it happened? Did that player score the goal that won the match? Score the goal that was a 6 goal and a 6-1? These kind of things. And I agree. I thought Spain played well. I think that the link up between Oyarzabal and Alba on the left was particularly prominent. And I think on most other occasions, little balls breaking in the box in different areas, and Spain won that game easy. And I think that the scoreline is a lie, and I don't think it really matters in this group with three teams going through. I think Spain will be perfectly fine. But let's move on and talk about Body Scotland earlier on in that day. To talk about XG, apparently Scotland were so much better than the Czechs on XG, but I don't really think the XG in isolation really reflected the dominance of one team versus the other in that game. And I'm saying that as a Scotsman. What's your take as a Northern Irishman?
Well, the comment I made on it is it felt a bit like when I was watching Northern Ireland, whereby you have a handful of players that are at the top end of the game in the top leagues, and then you're trying to fill in the gaps with players that just aren't. And if one of those gaps is like a clinical forward, you've kind of got a problem. And if another gap is a goalkeeper, you've got a problem. And basically, if you can't perform in the two boxes, you're not going to win matches consistently. And so when the chance falls to a guy that in all honesty, I haven't seen much of because I haven't been watching the championship, but when it fell to him and after watching him play in the game and he was completing 22% of his passes and getting none of his shots on target, and the ball falls to him, you just think he's not going to score because you need someone clinical. Like if that falls to Ali McCoist, it's 1-0 and Scotland, Scotland are back in the game. Whereas if it falls to him, you didn't really have confidence he was going to score. And it was a really big chance. It was a really good chance, but maybe he's just not technically at the level to be playing in an elite championship. And that's not to be harsh on him. It's just the talent pool for smaller countries like Scotland and Northern Ireland. That's just the way it is.
I agree. I think I was quite surprised when I looked at the XG figures after the game. And like, I'm a massive advocate of advanced stats, but I think people who are advocates of advanced stats have almost advanced beyond the point of talking about XG in isolation now. Like, I know that me and you, for example, and other stats guys that I speak to, like Tom Warville and the guys at Opta and Athletic, are not particularly interested in looking at XG in isolation anymore. They're looking at it over an extended period of time because that's where it shows the value. And I think that looking at that game, if you watch that game back without looking at any XG numbers, Czech Republic had the best chances in that game. Like, Marshall made unquestionably better saves than Valchik and the Czech goal, who actually get man of the match. The positions of the chances where they were created didn't really come forward in terms of showing maximum XG, but the openings of the positions around them and the positions of the defenders clearly suggested that they were really good opportunities. And the XG is also tied to the fact where Schick has scored a header where he's got two guys marking him, and headers are notoriously difficult to score on XG terms. And then he scored for the halfway line. So the two actual goals in the game must have had minimal XG, maybe under 0.1, maybe less than that in terms of their XG ability to score. So then you're adding up all those other chances around it. I just think that the opens that the Czechs created in that match are massively underrated, and I think our chances in the game are overrated. But
yeah,
maybe that's me just looking at it as a negative opinion after the fact. I mean, what did you think about how they played? Do you think the Czechs are a decent side, or do you think that we just gave them too much credit?
Well, to go back to the XG thing, what I would say is any model is basically only as good as the amount of data it has. And when it comes to shots, and you're looking at shots from open play, from headers, it's a very small sample of data compared to shots from players' feet. And so when you're looking at shots that are maybe like 8 yards out and a player's marking someone, it's a very small sample. And usually it's going to be a sample of forwards that are all mixed in height, but height isn't taken into account. So if you've got a forward like Peter Crouch or Patrick Schick or any of those big target men that are good in the air, Dzeko would be another one. They're going to massively outperform chances from header goals. I remember looking at a few years back Salah, the guy who unfortunately died, who was due to join Cardiff. He was massively performing XG from headers. I think he was like 6 goals above XG from like 2 XG of headers in the season. And that's because the XG of headers takes into account all players and treats them as equal, as if they're all the same height and they all have the same chance of winning that ball against the centre-back, but they don't. If you give the same chance to Peter Crouch that you do to Mohamed Salah, Mohamed Salah isn't going to outjump a 6'4" centre-back, whereas Peter Crouch can just stand there and head it. So it's one of those things. But and height of the ball is also an important thing. So if the ball's like 7 feet off the ground, Mohamed Salah is going to jump and get under that and head it over the bar. Whereas again, Peter Crouch, it just hits him in the face and goes in the goal. So that's the problem with XG from headers. They're massively underscored. I think StatsBomb have done a good job in changing it. They now take height into account of it. But ultimately, the forward that you have will dictate whether a chance is a good chance or not when it comes down to heading. And that's the thing. Patrick Schick's going to score chances like that very easily. He can just head that into the corner because he's a great header of the ball.
Yeah, I think we should do a totally separate pod on that as well, like the differences in XG models.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, it's the same as any other stats. Not all stats models are made equal, and particularly when it comes to the XG, so many elements feed into that. But, I mean, we need to wrap up, mate, because it's been quite a long chat here. So we're after the full round of match day one. What's your impressions of it, and who are you most impressed by and who are you least impressed by?
Most impressed by France so far. I think they look like the dominant team coming into it, and I don't know if that's a kiss of death or not. It might be. I was kind of underwhelmed by Portugal, but they still won, and I was underwhelmed by Portugal in 2016, and then they won it. So maybe that's a positive. I don't know.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm the same. France really, really impressed me tonight. In ways that perhaps I wasn't expecting. Like that kind of performance tonight stood up better against a really good team than it would against a Hungary, for example. I think they proved themselves at the very top level to be able to withstand pressure, but also be able to counter-attack and attack when they've got the ball. And they showed all the elements of transition of attack to me in that game tonight. And that's something that I've not seen from many other teams in the tournament. And I was kind of minorly impressed by Spain just because everybody else thought that was a bad performance, just counting passes. But it wasn't that. It was about game possession and control. Although I'm a little bit concerned by the fact that Spain are relying so much on Pedri, who's 18. Even though he's a generational talent, in my opinion, maybe in a couple of years' time, we're going to watch this guy as the best player in Spanish football, if not European football. They are so reliant on him at an early stage, and I don't think that would have happened in previous generations. And then on the opposite side, I really wasn't impressed by Croatia at all. Like, I thought England did a diligent job and did what they had to do to win that game, but that team showed their age in a hot atmosphere in a place where they were asked to kind of put on the front foot in the last half an hour, and they didn't really have any offensive weapons for me. Like, they don't have anybody like a Patrick Schick, for example, who can hold the ball up and bring other people into play the same way that Mandzukic used to. So I think nobody really expected Croatia to be a stellar team, but I still think that they are in position to be amongst the worst teams in the group, along with Scotland, I hope.
Well, one of the things I did want to, or actually two things I did want to mention to you first was the Pavard concussion. He obviously took one of the worst hits I've seen. It looked like a UFC knee to the back of the head, side of the head, and he looked like he was out. He didn't put his hands down to protect his fall, so he just landed face first in the turf, and he looked like he was knocked out. And once again, he's the one that seems to be making the call whether or not he can play on.
Yeah.
And if you're a footballer, like, you're a warrior, you want to be out there playing. So there's no way he's going to turn around and go, no, take me off, I took a bang to the head.
No, exactly. It feeds back into the Ericsson stuff we chatted about the other day. It's totally the same conversation. And the last thing that I wanted to add as well is, I think the refereeing in this tournament, I'm the first person to criticise VAR and criticise refereeing. I think the referee in this tournament has been absolutely exemplary so far. I think I think Matthias Lahoz from Spain has set a put a line in the sand from that Champions League performance, because he allowed the game to flow, he allowed everything to happen, and he only booked players when he absolutely had to. And I think we've seen that transition into this tournament, and it's made for better football. Because, as I said in the pre-tournament pod, I was expecting really quite attritional stuff, quite dull football, with players breaking up the game all of the time, and it's not really happened so far. It's been quite exciting. And I mean, Netherlands-Ukraine is one of the games of the tournament, of any tournament so far. It's been really, really great stuff. So that's one thing like I'm quite passionate about, is like refereeing and how that impacts the flow of the game. And I think the refereeing in this tournament so far has been absolutely superb. So hopefully that continues. Anyway, any last thoughts, Stephen, before we go?
No, just one last thing on the Hummels own goal. I really feel sorry for Hummels there, because I've played as a defender. And that ball where you're in between, you're running towards your own goal, and you know there's someone that's going to score behind you, and you just have to fling a leg at it. Oh, that's a nightmare. I remember Skirtle used to score on goals all the time like that. He hated running towards his own goal. I really felt sorry for the guy. That was too. A hard one.
Me too. Plus, I had Mbappe score the first goal when he was standing right behind him, so that would have been nice if he had let it go. But anyway, thank you very much, Stephen. A pleasure, mate.
You too, mate.
Guys, we'll catch you up on the next couple of episodes once match day 2 starts. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.